The family farm in Canada is gradually disappearing. The last census number showed that it was down 10% over 5 years previous, its lowest level since Confederation. Agriculture is undergoing rapid change with the end of the Canadian Wheat Board, new technologies like genetically engineered organisms, and the withdrawal of many government supports for family farms. Helping us to understand these changes is Zach Soltis, an independent researcher and Marxist economist who has been looking into the political economy of Western Canadian agriculture. He joins us in the studio. Welcome, Zach.
Thanks for inviting me, George.
So earlier this month, the Canadian Wheat Board lost its monopoly. The government ended the monopoly on the Wheat Board on wheat and barley marketing in Western Canada. Also this summer, the federal government authorized the sale of Viterra to Swiss multinational Glencore. What do these changes signal for Western Canadian agriculture?
Well, this signals accelerated developments in Canadian agriculture, which reflects the tendencies globally in agriculture in general. So the single desk monopoly of the Canadian Wheat Board has been duly abolished. And basically, this coincides with massive mergers and acquisitions in agribusiness, specifically in grain handling. And we're seeing huge capitals basically coming in, competing for large markets, and parceling out those markets amongst each other. So this is really significant. Not only is it a historical development, but I think this signals the future of the entire global supply of food and the political economy of agriculture.
What will that mean for our farmers?
Well, first of all, it will mean a massive diminishment in their bargaining power. Because the single desk monopoly has been abolished, Canadian Wheat Board now is one among many other marketers that will sell wheat, durum, and barley to farmers. So, although the new Canadian Wheat Board has basically signed contracts with about 20 grain handlers in the West, the grain handling business is so huge, and it's basically controlled by four or five multinational corporations. And so we're going to see, I think, a decline in bargaining power for small and medium-sized farmers, but also the continued decline in net incomes on farms, the continued decline in the number of farms, and the increased semi or full proletarianization of small and medium-sized farmers. So I think these are very significant. This is basically the dawn of a new era of monopoly capital in agriculture.
So Harper says that he's letting the market play out for agriculture. But you've argued that there is no open free market in agriculture, but the state has always been involved in agriculture. Can you talk about historically how the state has been involved in agriculture in Canada?
Right, well, the best example is how Canadian agriculture was formed in the West in the first place. So, first, the Canadian state expropriates the First Nations and Métis, and then gives 25 million acres of land to CPR so that it, in turn, can bring settlers to the West for virtually free and charge about $2 per acre. And so you have the Canadian state being instrumental in not only giving subsidies to CPR, but creating those markets, bringing people over there, bringing settlers to the West so that they're plopped into definite social relations. And those are the production of grains for the market based on the family farm within the framework of monopoly capital. This could not happen if the state were not involved. So that's one example. The second example is just the way the Canadian state's been handling this whole wheat board thing. because, I mean, first of all, it violates the Wheat Board Act, right? And secondly, it's been cutting its agri-stability payments to farmers now, which is basically a stability program, briefly, before the changes, if the income of farmers drop below 85% of their five-year average, it would get a payment to shore their incomes. Now it's dropped to 70. And that's supposedly going to save the federal and provincial governments collectively about $2 billion over the next 5 years. So we see real examples of how the state wields its power in order to promote certain interests. And those interests are big monopoly capital at the national level and global level, because Canadian-based and foreign-based companies are involved. And so really it's a fight of big capitals over very lucrative markets.
After the Second World War, the Canadian government was very much involved in supporting the family farm as an institution with things like supports for the Canadian Wheat Board, preferential rates for railway shipping and that sort of thing. Why was it so involved then, if it's moving away from supporting the family farm today?
Right. Well, I think the Second World War was what I call the great leap forward in Canadian agriculture, because before World War II, it was a precarious, volatile, labor-intensive, boring on subsistence level farming. But because of the needs of the war effort and because of massive state intervention in the economy and the stabilization of food prices through the monopoly Canadian Wheat Board in 1943, when it finally got its single best monopoly, it was able to accelerate basically the development of farming from a very precarious sector to a highly mechanized, highly developed sector where R&D in universities and government departments became priority to, you know, guarantee a stable flow of food and to really keep agriculture from experiencing collapses such as it did in the 1930s.
During the 20th century, there was also a lot of farmer organization that really pushed for better rights for farmers. There was this establishment of credit unions, wheat pools, political parties like the CCF. But nowadays, despite the renewed profit gouging from big agribusiness, it seems that rural Canada largely has thrown its lot in with neoliberalism. You know, in spite of Harper wanting to get rid of the Canadian Wheat Board, most rural districts in Canada did vote for the Conservatives. How do you characterize that contradiction, maybe?
I think the politics of farmers or petty producers in general is very contradictory. I mean, it's not linear, and it's very messy, because in the 20s, most farmer cooperatives or organizations were pretty conservative, but it took the Depression to really radicalize them, and that was in the space of, say, a decade and a half, culminating in the CCF and all the wheat pools that are now gone or have been privatized. And so, fast forward to, say, the last 20, 25 years, where those politics have basically subsided because it's coincided with just the general tendencies in Canadian agriculture. So, for example, the decline in the small farm, the decline of political and economic power of the small and medium-sized farmers, and the growing clout, both in the arena of politics and the market, of corporate farms, prosperous farmers, and the agribusiness in general. I think those politics reflect what's going on the ground. What those developments that we don't see on a day-to-day basis, but they are happening. And those census stats you quoted earlier in the show are very telling, even in the last 20 years since 1991. So,
what do you think that these shifts in agriculture will mean for Canadian consumers who live in cities or elsewhere in Canada?
Well, I think we've basically entered an era of rising food prices on the shelves, declining incomes for most farmers, those who are at the bottom rung, and food prices being subjected to speculation. So I think we're going to see a lot more volatility in food prices, and we're going to see a lot more volatility in agriculture in terms of farmers experiencing collapses in incomes or having huge boom years and then the next year being stricken by drought, right? And this is also connected, right? The ecological crisis is definitely tied to the crisis in cannabis farming. And with the continued exploitation of the soil and soil nutrients through capitalist methods of farming, I'm only reiterating what's been already documented worldwide is declining soil productivity from capitalist farming. So I think this is really ushering in an era of volatility and precariousness, not only for farmers, but for workers and many producers elsewhere in the world.
If agriculture in Canada is becoming more corporate controlled, are there viable alternatives with supporting farmers' markets, consumer-supported agriculture, and these kinds of local solutions for connecting farmers with their urban consumers?
Right. Well, I think the attempts to form community-centered markets and linking farmers, growers, producers with consumers is, I think, a good thing. But the problem with that is that it's not tackling head-on capital in agriculture. What it is it's circumventing it, I think. What really posed a challenge to agribusiness and to the Canadian state historically have been the powerful mobilizations of farmers, either through producer co-ops and producer boycotts of grain exchanges, or the formation of political parties, which basically demand concrete action on part of the state in terms of promoting certain interests. And those interests, for example, for farmers, small and medium, were protecting those farms from monopolistic exploitation by grain handlers, by railroads. But those measures obviously have run its course only because there was no real transformation in Canadian agriculture. What I'm hinting at here is there was no real revolution in the countryside that was more, say, centered on collective production or the fostering or solidifying of cooperative production.
Do you think that the volatility that you spoke about earlier presents a renewed opportunity for coalitions in the countryside and among workers to foster new forms of production?
this point, my answer is no, but there's always the possibility of politics getting in the way and farmers mobilizing. Now, I think that mobilization that we saw, say, in the 30s, is not going to repeat itself now, only because most small farms and medium-sized farms are on the decline. So it's very hard to replicate what happened in the 30s politically now. But it still doesn't mean that farmers and workers can organize around these issues. And but we have a lot of work to do, because at the moment there is no credible countervailing power from the working classes, and I use that term broadly, including farmers, to really stop freight train that's going off the rails, right? I am mixed with pessimism and optimism at the same time.
Well, thanks for bringing this perspective to us, Zach.
You're welcome.
I've been speaking with Zach Soltis, an independent researcher and Marxist economist. You're listening to Mud and Water on CKUW 95.9 FM.